The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back. As we head into Hour 3, it's a delight to have Sam Stone with us. Sam Stone, for your ride home. Sam the Paul on Twix, P-O-L. He is a political consultant in town and the host of his own radio show, heard here on 960 AM every Saturday morning at 9 AM. How are you, Sam?
Seth, I'm doing good. How about you? Well, I should say I'm doing better than the economy.
Yeah, I want to talk about the economy. It's interesting what's going to crowd a lot of that news out, and we can talk about the things crowding it out, too. But first of all, diffident as I am to weigh in on anything having to do with sports games.
Yes.
You sent me a instant message, a text, that this new franchise in this new hockey franchise in Salt Lake City, in Utah, might be called the Yetis.
Yeah. So that apparently is like the number one choice of name from all the kids in the hockey leagues there is the Utah Yetis.
Yeah.
Which I think is fantastic.
Why do you think that, Sam?
Well, first off, it's original, right?
Okay.
I mean,
okay.
It's not the standard, you know, Utah salt drillers or whatever. You
know, the salt flats. Okay. All right.
Yeah, all right. I mean, you know, it's, first, team names are getting worse.
Okay.
Right?
Like, all right.
The Cleveland Indians had the opportunity to change, you know, got forced into changing their name, which I thought was silly in the first place because they were named the Cleveland Indians because they had the first Native American ball player who played for them.
Okay.
And then they name themselves the Guardians.
Yeah, that
which
really
is just silly.
Yeah,
like, there's no connection to Cleveland.
Means,
if you were going to rename it, there was a in their past. There was, I think, it was actually a Negro League team there that was the Cleveland Spiders, and that's probably that would be a way better name, and would, you know, certainly.
Oh God, yes. Guardians doesn't mean anything.
A lot,
yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, what'd they just do? Watch Guardians of the Galaxy and their kid got all excited?
Yeah,
I mean, that's just silly.
Yeah.
So first, I like the originality. Second, I love the logo. You'll be able to sell a ton of merch.
Yeah, you
of
probably
that.
Will. Yeah.
I know you have some entomological issues with the choice of Yeti over other options.
Uh-huh.
And I'll let you explain that.
Yeah.
But you know what? Utah Yetis is it rolls up.
Okay, all right. Let's distill this. You've done some good work here, Sam. And mascots and names of sports teams are kind of interesting. And the one you sent me, it gets something right and something wrong. First of all, we need to distinguish. There has a Yeti itself is a kind of cryptid, but it's confined to the Himalayas. You know, between India and China. It's never been shown in North America. There is no evidence a Yeti has ever appeared in North America, first of all. So it's a little weird. But, okay, I mean, if you want to get into weirdness and mascots, not the first thing that's ever happened.
Let's be honest, Diamondbacks had a snake costume person running around for like a decade.
Don't get me started with the Diamondbacks, because they are named after a rattlesnake, but the mascot eats rattlesnakes, Bobcat. How is the mascot a Bobcat when your team is the rattlesnakes? Don't get me – that's a whole other problem.
Oh, no, it's really simple. I'll tell you for a fact. So they had a snake costume, you know, thing, but it scared the crud out of kids.
Right. Okay, so better they should pet bobcats.
Well, no, so someone had to come up with something new. And what was the most popular mascot in the state when they came up with that, with the bobcat?
Yeah.
Was Wilbur the Wildcat.
All right. I'm waiting for the team that gets us a Savannah cat. That's the team I will follow.
Okay. I mean, actually, I don't know. We have the Savannah Bananas.
They need a Savannah Cat. Here's the one thing that they do get right, though, at the Salt Lake City Yeti, with the logo that you sent me, the Perspective logo. The Yeti in Himalayan lore and culture actually is more of a bear than an ape. And you get that from this mascot. So it's kind of good in that sense. It's educational in that sense. It breaks up the general concept that they're all the same, because they're not all the same.
Okay, so there is that. So it is a visually appropriate
It's
mascot.
Visually appropriate, just not geographically appropriate.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Can we move on
now? I still think it's a great name for a
team. Yeah, I'm good with it. I'm good with it. The Yetis. And it might even conflict with that company. Is it a good company, the Yeti company, the sports goods company, camping company?
I don't know if they have any sort of political persuasion.
Yeah, I don't either.
I do know.
I kind of want to like their products. They're kind of tough. I want to like them. They're expensive.
I do, too. It's one of the reasons, Coleman, right?
Yes.
I like their products.
Yes, classic Coleman. Yes.
Yes.
In fact, on Twix, your picture with you on a tractor trailer truck of some kind.
Yes.
I bet there's a Coleman.
It's a farm tractor.
I bet there's a Coleman. I bet there's a Coleman somewhere in that picture that we can't see. I bet there is.
There is, as a matter of fact, a Coleman cooler on the back of the hay trailer.
There you go.
You know, you rope it on there, and then as you're going along, you can grab a drink.
And it needs to be really green.
Back in those days,
was it red or green?
Orange.
It was orange.
No, remember orange? the original orange one with the white top.
Green with the metal handles.
Okay, now this would have been the orange with the white top.
All right, and clearly you somewhere had a Carhartt jacket too. I bet.
No, but that's partially the difference between Western and Eastern. It would have been at that time L.L. Bean.
Oh, really? Oh, very fancy of you. Very
but before L.L. Bean became
before it came into the prep thing.
Yeah. Back when L.L. Bean was actually just hiking clothes.
Okay, all right.
They were doing basically very similar to Carhartt, right? But with a more Eastern feel. So you'd have instead of the waxed leather exterior that you get in the West, you get the denim exterior.
Neither
with
of which
lining underneath it,
all of which are marketed to stand up vertically, no matter how many times you wash them.
Yes.
You cannot break the stiffness of the jacket.
No.
If you could,
it would ruin the entire
thing. It would ruin the whole point. Yes.
Look, you're supposed to be a straight jacket.
I don't know why we haven't figured this out for people with back or posture problems. Give them a Carhartt. You know, it never bends. It'll just keep you in perfect posture.
It's like yesterday. one of my female friends sent me and I don't even know how I ended up on the thread, but I got included on a thread with all her girlfriends, with her putting out a meme that said, "Behind every confident woman is a yoga instructor telling her to move her shoulders back and down."
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's what we're dealing with.
That's what we're dealing with.
The code version of this.
All right, let's move to the economy. So this story will not get a lot of mention. In fact, I want to talk about that, but tell us the story, the GDP.
Yeah, so new numbers coming out today and more will be coming out tomorrow. And you're right, it's not going to get – there's so many things that are absorbing the news, and also this stuff is complicated and people kind of roll their eyes. But first quarter GDP growth slowed to 1.6%,
uh-huh.
So about half of where we were last quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And 50% below projections.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, U.S. consumer price index inflation soared from 2% to 3.7%.
Yeah.
So what that means, if you add it all up, is that you have inflation with a stagnating economy.
Right.
Stagflation.
That's exactly right. Yep.
And stagflation is the single worst thing you can have in your economy.
Right.
It is a absolute devastating condition to working class people and families.
Right.
And we've seen this coming for people who have really been paying attention. As Americans were maxing out their credit cards to stay afloat, as they have been falling behind, delinquencies on auto loans and on utilities are just going through the roof. we are running out of room to stomach the Bidenflation economy anymore. And just as that's happening, inflation is picking back up again.
Yeah.
The economy is slowing down.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, and this is not an accident, by the way. The economy is slowing down. A lot of people don't understand. They want to credit Joe Biden for the growth from 2020 to now.
Right.
Well, a lot of that's just recovery from the self-inflicted harm.
Yeah. And lockdown, 2020 right? was an aberration. Let me take a quick commercial break and pick up on all that, because that's an important note for people to look at the growth rate under Trump. It's about 2.3%, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Here we're getting a report for, as you put it, 1.6. And yes, Joe Biden thinks he deserves credit for, yeah, we'll do that with Sam Stone when we come back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Sam Stone is my guest, political consultant, radio host, Sam the Paul on Twitter, X, Twix. So, right, Sam, the growth of the economy, really the healthiest way to measure an economy, is, as you were pointing out, not only a pathetic 1.6 right now, but half what we did in the last quarter, and half, again, below what I think the major banks were expecting, that is to say what they were planning on. It's a big shock. It's a shock to the system.
It's a huge shock, and it puts the Fed in a almost untenable position. This is the greatest fear of Fed directors and of economists, because the Fed basically has four mechanisms to address the economy. They can raise the interest rate, or they can lower the interest rate, and then they can print money, or they can take money from the economy, essentially buy it back, right? So you can increase or decrease the money supply, and you can increase or decrease the discount rate, which sets the rate of interest for pretty much everything. Here's the problem. If you do the things that you need to do to slow inflation, raising the interest rates, reducing the money supply, if you do that, which they had been doing, right? You put a damper on the economy. If you go the other direction, you increase rates, it makes it harder and harder for people to borrow. So, yeah, you know, what we're in a position now is that if they lower rates, inflation will go through the roof. And if they increase rates, the economy will tank. And when you're dealing with stagflation, there's no proper answer. Which way you go, you're almost stuck. And so I think you're going to see by next week a real correction in the markets. I think you're going to see a big dip in stocks. And you're also going to see questions of whether the Fed needs to go back to raising interest rates. And if they do that, right now, it will likely absolutely crater the economy, because then that affects all those credit card balances that people have been ringing up, and it affects all the other loans. The commercial real estate market has been a disaster, and that's a big part of it. There is so much in our economy that was built on low-cost money,
right,
on low-interest money.
Cheap money, yep, mm-hmm. Right.
That now that is not there, and it is not an option to go there.
Right.
Our economy is not designed for this.
Right.
And boy, we are headed down a bad, bad road.
Let me hold that question. Let me do this. You and I operate in several similar circles, and we know people from broad swaths of the income scale, or the quintiles of income scale. I think it's fair to say. I know your peeps. You know mine.
Yeah.
And I have never in 50 so many years of life, I've never seen such a divide in those quintiles as to how people anecdotally think the economy is going. If you watch Bill Maher on a Friday night or whatever, he will often make the case the economy is just fine. Everything's just fine. And boy, I don't know anyone who thinks that outside of those in his income level. I really don't. And it's weird. It's weird, and it borderlines a kind of, it's not arrogance or elitism, but it borderlines a kind of blinder as to what's going on in this country.
Well, it's bubble life.
There.
People are being wrapped in their own bubbles. And, you know, the break point might be a couple $100,000 a year of income kind of thing, where if, you know, if you're making a few $100,000 or more, and you really, you know, what is a few extra percent on your groceries? It makes no difference.
If you're single.
Yeah, well, yes. Obviously, if you're, you know, married couple, you increase
or
that number.
Or with no kids. Right.
But, I mean, if, you know, if you're at the point where you have significant disposable income, then there really isn't any impact to your life from inflation on groceries and gas and all this sort of thing. You fill up the car, you don't even think about it, you just pay for it.
Right.
You go to the grocery store, you shop, you get whatever you want, you don't think about it, you just pay for it. What you're concerned with is where your investments are headed. And that's looked very good, right?
Yeah.
The stock market has been going up like crazy. Certain areas of the economy are growing like crazy. Now, that hid weakness in more traditional areas of the economy. You know, oil has been very strong in pricing, in part because of limited acquisition of new sources, in part because of exportation and the fact that Europe has been made far more dependent on U.S. natural gas since the invasion of Ukraine. So there are factors propping up that industry. There are factors with AI and all the tech stuff where that's a really, it is a fundamental shift in the basis of the economy. And so those sectors will continue to grow at some rate. But retail, manufacturing, all these kind of things underlying it have not been as strong. And now we're going to see a real hit there. If you're living paycheck to paycheck and all of a sudden your groceries are 20% more expensive, and your gas is 20% more expensive, and your home heating bill is 30% more expensive, cooling bill, whatever, that is you having to make decisions about what you will do without.
That's right. Or you're jacking up your credit card. You might be taking early withdrawals from a 401k with penalties. I mean, I know people that are doing that.
Yes. Yes, I do as well. And they're living absolutely on the edge, praying for an end to this economy. And this is the worst thing that can happen to them. These are the folks that will be most uniquely vulnerable, because if you're racking up that credit card bill and now the interest rates, we have to keep raising interest rates to tame inflation again, your monthly cost goes up. The cost of that money for you goes up. If you have any kind of variable rate loan, variable rate mortgage, anything like that, your cost goes up. Business loans, your cost goes up. Small businesses in particular, bridge loans. A lot of small businesses need short-term bridge loans because their income isn't steady throughout the year, especially like retail, right? You make like all your money basically at Christmas. So you basically are trying to break even and hold on the rest of the year. And sometimes you need a bridge loan. That goes way up. If you're a big corporation, this isn't that big a deal. If you're the mom and pop shop on the corner, it is devastating.
We were making the point before the break in the last segment. We're heading into another one, so let's not lose it, and let's pick up on it when we come back. The credit Joe Biden was taking for an economy that was on the repair for some time, but on the repair, I would argue, at a very meager level, and on the repair at a meager level from a crater of 1 year. And I wonder if we might pick up on that when we come right back. Can we do that?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Sam Stone is my guest, political consultant, radio host, Breaking Battlegrounds, heard here every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 960 The Patriot. Follow him on Twitter, X, Twix, as we call it, at Sam the Paul. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Sam Stone is my guest, as he is most Thursdays when he's in town. Sam, Joe Biden, speaking of the economy, was taking credit and has been actually for the last weirdly month or two for a rebounding economy. And it's just also odd to me because he's basing it on an economy that he kind of tanked for a while. And it's as if, I don't know what the exact analogy is I want here, But if you have a thermostat that's set at 78 and you crank it to 85 and then move it down back to 82, you're taking credit for lowering the temperature. I kind of feel like that's what he's done.
Well, that's exactly what he's done, Seth. I mean, look, obviously the economic decline of 2020 was self-inflicted by the lockdown policies and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yep.
And so comparing 20, if you're doing an honest analysis, you basically would have to wipe out 2020 and 2021 and go from 2019 to 2022 and see where it goes. In that vein, growth has been absolutely anemic under Joe Biden. And one thing people are not realizing is the growth that he's had, there's a couple of things underlying it that make it even more deceptive and less real than they want to pretend. First and foremost, red states came bouncing back much faster than blue states economically following the pandemic.
Yeah, right.
Because they opened up sooner, they got back to business, people weren't hiding, people weren't remote working.
They got more people.
Yeah, people started moving in.
Yeah.
They bounced back much faster, right?
Right.
So there's sort of two waves of recovery. And Joe Biden is taking credit for them as if the second wave, which was blue states finally starting to bounce back,
yep,
it was some sort of economic achievement on his part rather than just a correction for the reopening.
Yep, yep.
That's garbage.
Right.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
Right.
Two, they keep touting jobs numbers and growth. Well, if you look underlying the jobs numbers, almost all the jobs that are being created under Joe Biden in the private sector are part-time jobs.
That's right.
The majority, the actual majority of jobs created in the Biden years, full-time jobs, are government jobs at one level or another.
Right. Right.
So those are, you cannot, we pretend that those are jobs like any other jobs, but when you're looking at the overall economy, those jobs are not a net positive.
Well, they are if you're a Democrat, I suppose. I mean, I remember Bernie Sanders was proposing that you could have 100% employment or 0% unemployment, I guess would be the better way to put it, because the government could hire everyone. And they have moved in that direction, or everyone who doesn't have a job or is looking for a job. And they have very steadily moved into that direction. They see no difference between the public and private sector. In fact, probably to the degree that they do see a difference, they probably do think that there's that the public sector is a better place to work. They probably do.
Well, it might be a better place to work for an individual employee, but for the economy, that's an absolute lie.
Well, of course.
Because that job is funded by taxpayer dollars.
Of course.
And so, sure, in the end, that person is also going to pay taxes on their money.
Mm-hmm.
But all that does is give the government an opportunity to double dip on the same dollar.
Correct. That's correct.
And so it's, you know, this is a net negative. Every government job is a net negative in the economy. Now, you need some of them, right? I'm not saying we shouldn't have police, we shouldn't have fire, we shouldn't have all the other things that we do. Well, we shouldn't have all of them. We should have some of them. But at the end of the day, pretending that that is a net positive is absolutely foolish and wrong. And they're relying on that. And then the other element behind this that they're not really talking about is the wartime spending, which is driving costs, which is increased. I mean, we talked about oil, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's being affected by events that are going on overseas.
Mm-hmm.
But likewise, the money that's being pumped in, the billions and billions, you keep hearing them say, well, we're going to give, you know, $60 billion to Ukraine, but 70% of that money will stay in this country.
Right.
Right? Again, it's the same problem as a government employee. That money is already tax money, or in this case, it's printed fake money.
I think we're in big trouble. I think we're in big trouble.
We're in big trouble. Hang on to your hats, folks.
I'm not one
of those doom and gloom economist types.
No.
I'm not predicting the next big collapse.
Nor are we wishing for it.
No.
Let me,
I'm simply telling you, we got a problem.
And let me, short segment on the long one coming up, Sam. Let's talk about why and what is crowding out this story. Sam Stone and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Sam Stone is my guest, political consultant, radio host in his own right. Show here every Saturday morning, Breaking Battlegrounds at 9 a.m. right here on 960. a.m. Sam, did you by chance have a see this Jon Stewart monologue on how the media is covering the Trump trials? Did you have a chance to see it? I don't blame you if you didn't, but
I actually did not. No,
he did a. We played a little bit of it earlier. He did a. He did a thing on, I don't know what you might call it, Trump porn, how all the major media is like treating every little element of the New York case as breaking news. Trump gets in his car. Trump is leaving his house. Trump is walking into the courtroom. And then they did the sketch artists, and they interviewed the sketch artists. And then they interrupt guests who are talking about the trial to say Trump is now getting in his car. It's really worth watching. You can easiest way to get to it is through Powerline. I think they have a thing on it. Scott Johnson or Hinderocker or one of the guys. And son of a gun, I just thought it was so true how ridiculous they are treating this trial, with every little moment being breaking news. Trump gets in his car. Stewart did a good job with it. And I'm watching Andy McCarthy and Jonathan Turley on Fox this afternoon, and son of a gun, talking about this trial, Sandra, whatever her name is, breaks and interrupts to say, just needed to interrupt you to show a picture. Donald Trump is getting in his car. Anyway, yeah, I mean, you would, right. Breaking news, jury still deliberating is how we joke around here. But this the pornography over this is an obsession that's weird. It's not as if it's a car chase, as Jon Stewart said. It's not a car chase in a Ford Bronco. It's called commuting. You know, it's called commuting. And I guess the point is that we are easily distracted right now from the main things.
Yes.
That is something I blame on the news media. They continually complain about us not focusing on the real stuff, and yet they continue to divide. Let's talk about division. They continue to complain about divisiveness. What could be more divisive than an attorney general, let's say someone who wins by maybe a couple hundred votes, like a very low number of votes in an election?
It's 200 and something, maybe?
Something like under 300 votes. Indicting political opponents over a case that no one is thinking about anymore and really has very odd implications and doesn't even bring into it those that are necessary to create the conspiracy, or shall we say someone who decries the partisanship and the bitterness and the divisiveness, who is suing a political opponent over political campaign slander. There's nothing more. I don't want to hear about divisions from people who are lighting and igniting the fires of divisiveness. I'm just tired of it.
Well, and that's the entire Democrat playbook. But understanding what's going on with the Trump cases and the media is twofold. One, it's right there in New York where they all live.
Right.
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 But two, go back to 2016. Every one of these networks, including MSNBC, made a giant pile of cash off of Donald Trump.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And then in 2020, they adopted the electorally successful strategy of denying him any face time whatsoever.
Right.
And their ratings were nowhere near as good.
Right.
They lost a bundle of money.
Right.
I mean, they didn't lose. They're still profitable, but, you know, comparatively. Here's a case where they can cover Donald Trump incessantly and get all those eyeballs, but defend themselves in their newsroom that we're covering his trial. It's about him going to jail, and not face the blowback from their newsroom and the far left for having him on all the time.
Yep.
So they're basking in the ratings glow while they can avoid the blowback that they received after 2016.
Yep. Yep.
And then Chris Mayes here in Arizona, the case you're referring to, indicting the alternate electors first. There's actually a clear historical precedent out of the Nixon-Kennedy campaign in Hawaii, when the state's delegation was sat for Nixon, and Kennedy's team was challenging the results of the election, put together their own slate of electors before the election was fully certified and so forth and so on. Then there was a court challenge. Kennedy ended up getting credit for winning Hawaii by 150 votes. And the court, there was a court challenge to that alternate group of electors, and the court said, well, yeah, they're okay. They had to be there.
Yeah, in case any litigation went in the other direction or any recounts went in the other direction, you had to have an alternate slate, right? Obviously.
Right.
Yeah.
It, which is
you
what
can't
happened,
have Biden electors if Trump's the winner.
Right.
Right.
So you wouldn't have had – Kennedy would not have had those electors had they not sat them before the election was fully certified and court cases had been completed. So the precedent for what they did does not suggest that they were breaking the law. And as you point out, they very carefully did not indict the people that you would need to indict to make it a conspiracy.
Right.
The point is not to win this case, because Chris Mays knows that her chances of winning this case, no matter how fervently the staff at the Arizona Republic is praying for it, winning this case is somewhat too highly unlikely. I mean, it depends. Obviously, these days you have jurists and juries who are deciding cases on things other than the law.
Yeah, but I would gather she loses this. I would gather.
But that said, I think I don't think she's even planning on trying to win the case. The goal is to make the case run through the election
and make Republicans uncomfortable. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's to keep it in the news through the election as if it will be presented as if they're guilty throughout.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And so this comes back to what I keep telling people is, listen, Democrats have exactly and only two issues they've run on now for 3 years, which is abortion on January 6th.
That's it.
Those are the only two things they have.
Yep.
Those are the only two things they campaign on.
Yep.
So at the end of the day, regardless of any reality or truth, that's what they have. They're firing these cases out as fast as they can. They moved, if you saw, they moved to indicting January 6th people who were at the Capitol but who didn't enter the building.
Yeah, none of these people were in yeah.
Didn't break the law.
None of them.
I mean, I'm not talking about these electors, but I'm actually talking about in D.C.
Supposedly we're supposed to respect protest, at least if you live on a college campus. You want to say something about that in our closing segment?
Yeah, but the point very clearly is they're doing this so that they continue to have January 6th cases in the news.
Yes, of course. January 6th cannot be forgotten. It is the most determinant piece of American history because it was worse than the Civil War, don't you know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So much worse that we have to being told that. Yes, exactly. Right. All right. Can I close the show with you on a short segment on the college campus situation?
No, I was just going to dump out and leave you to do it by yourself. Seth.
Oh, Sammy.
Go ahead.
You sit tight. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Sam Stone has been and is my guest. Sam, there's so much to say about what's going on the college campuses. The thing I am most interested in of late is this new claim by the protesters, rioters, and their Amen Corner in the Progressive Caucus of the House of Representatives that is saying you cannot bring the police into the college campuses because these college campuses are private universities and they will add an inflammatory element to an already tense tinderbox. The police presence will make the rioters more riotous. It will be an exacerbation of the problem. This is a new argument to me. This is a new argument to me in the sense that I never understood until today, thank you, Ilhan Omar, that if you are a private property owner, you can do whatever you want inside your house, legal or illegal, and the police can only go there if you invite them. Abuse away. Engage in a battering situation. Abuse a child. Engage in other illegal behavior. Until the landlord or landowner says the police are welcome, they aren't welcome. That's what we're expected to swallow here, on top of the fact that these students think that the police presence is what's the problem.
Well, first, most of these campuses are riddled with public property because they have roads and things that run through them that are publicly maintained.
Fair
so,
enough.
You know, it's a more questionable issue. But more to the point, for Ilhan Omar, this may be about jihad because she is a jihadi, right? For most Democrats, what this is about is recreating 2020's Summer of Love.
Oh.
and bulldozing the electorate the same way they did with the George Floyd protests.
Yep.
And bulldozing corporate, the corporations, academia, and all these institutions the way they did in 2020. I mean, you literally had all the biggest corporations in America get together and conspire, as they admitted in Time and The New Yorker, conspire to ensure Joe Biden was elected and get rid of Donald Trump. Why did they do that? Specifically, they expressed because they felt that otherwise all these businesses, these storefronts they have and all their would be burned to the ground.
Yep.
So literally, Democrats were successful in igniting violent, evil protests.
Yep.
That helped them win an election, and they're trying to repeat that playbook. It is, first off, if you're a college dean or you're a college president and you don't have the courage to just take every one of these folks, you can protest, but when you're engaging in violent suppression of Jewish people on your campus, when you're engaging in harassment, when you're engaging in physical assaults, when you are occupying buildings and violating the law and breaking the peace, that's not protesting, that's law breaking. And those kids, the answer to this is so easy and so clear. And the fact that our college presidents and college leadership do not have courage to do it, which is just expel every last one of them.
I'll make a compromise
and
with
it's
them.
Over.
I'll make a compromise with them. Don't send in the police. Send in the FBI. They're engaging in material support for terrorism. See how they like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, they're perfect. Let's pack them all off to Gitmo for all I care at this point. Just get rid of it.
I got to go. Sam, God bless you, sir. Thank you. And thank you all. Until tomorrow, God bless and class dismissed.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.